Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And we're back with part two of the Leonie Reynolds interview. If you've not listened to part one, I strongly recommend you listen to it before listening to this, because then you'll know what on earth we're talking about. Okay, let's take it away. And so one of the things I liked that I thought was really exciting when I saw the presentation at WeirdCon was the questionnaire that they'd filled in shows up again later, and also with the case exchange. Describe that to us, because that's...
Okay, so people, they would, as part of their the envelope package that they were given at the very beginning, they were told that they would need to evaluate their partner, and they would need to evaluate their partner in terms of how well they did each exercise and what their engagement was with each exercise. So partly, as well, that kind of put them on notice that they were, you know, they were going to be judged as to whether are you a good audience member or not, basically. We had a point at which the audience discovered a bicycle with inside the bicycle was a suitcase, and a metal suitcase. They were able to open the suitcase with a key that they discovered at an earlier dead drop, and then they, inside the case, they discovered a folder, and that was where they needed to deliver their evaluation forms. And it's funny, you know, this is something that the audience created. They then stopped and filled out their forms, and that became a beat of the show. I had kind of been imagining they would fill out their forms as they went. But, you know, this is again, you know, you can't predict how an audience is going to behave.
Yeah.
And so they would then sort of take a fair amount of time filling out their forms, actually. and, you know, I wonder if that was because it was, you know, a nice opportunity for them to rest. And actually, I think I have a note here of some of their comments about their fellow audience
their
members.
Evaluation,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah, and because they were also asked at the bottom of the form, do you have any other comments on your fellow partner? And you can really see here that they really, by their notes, that they were really entering into the spirit of things and being kind of playful. Here are some of the comments. They weren't very good at the whole code word thing. Also, probably been better if he hadn't locked the car. Distractible, unresponsive to code, but keen as mustard, if naive. Nice eyes. She was the most into it at first and over the top excited by payphone call. She's lovely, I'd sleep with her. That, I happen to know that was the boyfriend of that particular audience member, thankfully. And someone else wrote, very, very enigmatic, if it was up to me, Sylvia would be dead. Sylvia is the missing agent. Now, I don't know if this person meant, I think I'm not very good as a secret agent. Or if they meant, I don't really like this person.
Really good.
Yeah, so they put their notes in the case. They were then told that they needed to do a classic secret agent suitcase exchange. So they needed to draw straws to decide who was going to do the exchange, and the straws were actually in the case, kind of presented. They were sort of presented in the middle of the case, in the middle of kind of a foam pad, in this very ceremonial way.
Oh, fantastic.
They were told that they needed to draw straws, and the reason for that was, again, I was thinking about, I don't want one audience member doing all the fun stuff. You know, if there's someone who happens to be a bit of a pushy, grabby person, you know, I want to contain them. And
or even someone that's shy and they're just not very comfortable coming forward.
So basically, if there is more than one volunteer, you need to do this. And again, for the semaphore exchange across the lagoon, I had them do rock, paper, scissors. But I called it fifth victory surrender to just kind of, you know, make it a little bit more fun.
In keeping with
it. As civilians know it as rock, paper, scissors, just to make sure, because otherwise they would have had no clue what I was talking about. So they drew straws, they then went and took the suitcase, sat on a bench, and a crew member would then approach with an identical suitcase, and the audience member then needed to pick up that suitcase and, you know, come back.
Fantastic.
Yes. And so...
And that's the sort of thing you've seen in movies before.
Yes.
And if you get to do that, that's quite cool, I think.
Yes, that was really what I wanted to do. I was trying to find as many movie tropes as possible, as many things that, you know, people have seen in movies. They've seen phones ring, you know, phone boxes ring in movies. No New Zealander has ever heard a cell phone, phone box ring. And again, no one has ever exchanged, you know, cases before. And so they then opened the case. We did actually they opened the case with the same key that they'd used for the first case. We did have one unfortunate evening when the audience had, trying to be helpful, had put the key to the case in their first case that they delivered.
Oh no.
And so,
have a key for the second case.
Yeah, and so then we had to basically just send a crew member across and say, we have a special delivery for you, and hand them a key.
I thought he was going to say they started like battering the other case, so I got a screwdriver out.
My God, they would have been so, I would have jumped out and battered them if they'd done that. But, and in actual fact, the same key worked for both cases because it was a cheap case.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was a cheap case with a generic key, basically. So they then opened the next case, and inside that was a quantum scanning device, which was in three pieces, which they needed to piece together. And this was just had an LED light. It was a very basic, it was one of those colanders that open like a camera.
Oh no, like the old flash.
I'm doing things with my hands, but I don't know how to describe it in words.
No, it's like quite an old-fashioned flashbulb thing.
Yes, exactly, like those old camera flashes that sit on the top of an old camera. So that was on the end. So it basically looked like a scanner, so like a satellite dish scanner. So they screwed it all together. When they pulled the trigger, some LED lights came on, and this is when the sort of the lo-fi pretending to be hi-fi thing really kicked into gear, because as soon as the light came on, I would start sending all caps messages to all of the audience going, tracking, and so someone's swinging this thing around, tracking, quantum signal coming from the east. You know, and so it seems as though it's responsive to the gun.
And you've got the silent witness who said, right, they've got the gun out, they're doing it now.
Yes, so it would be, you know, it would be, tell me the minute the light comes on, and my finger would be poised to hit send on the tracking message. So, and actually some of the time I didn't actually need the witness because they were just close enough that I could just see them and dust was just setting in.
So the little light go on.
Yeah, and it was actually, that was a really exciting moment for me because that was when, there they are. I'm bringing them in, now I'm guiding them home sort of thing. And I discovered pretty quickly that I couldn't actually send like real-time things like move it to the left, because people were swinging it around wildly and there was no way I could respond, you know, quick enough. So I ended up just having to say, you know, move into Papa direction. That's, you know, the name of the museum that was nearby. And I at first, you know, the first few nights I was trying to be more cryptic, which turned out to be a mistake, because I would say, you know, signal coming from large metal box, which was supposed to be, they were supposed to work out that the back of the truck was a large metal box, and they basically didn't work that out, and they would overshoot, and then I'd have to kind of herd them back. It really was like herding cats. So, you know, eventually I was like, okay, fine, signal coming from back of truck. Which probably wasn't as over-obvious as I thought it was to them, you know?
I think the other fun bit I remember you saying was, you mentioned about the phones. Why were they holding their phones up?
They were holding their phones up because they had discovered a note that said that there was a data cloud underneath this metal ball, that because the alternate universe was kind of breaking through at that point, and so they needed to hold their phones up to receive the signal. And so they would be holding their phones in the air, and they actually were doing that without even being told. And then I had a series of messages that I would send through Signal Week, signal too weak, hold device higher, higher, you know, and, you know, signal coming through more strongly, you know, stand by for transmission. And then they'd get a message from the agent who was in the parallel universe. And a lot of people said that was their favourite part of the show. And New Zealanders are famously, we are quite shy, reserved people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was, you know, working against this as well, but what I was trying to do was create an experience that I was safety in numbers, basically. I thought, you know, if I ask people to do something that is a little bit silly, but they're doing it in a group, that's when it will be fun. I was wanting to hit that sweet spot between, you know, before it gets to, okay, I just feel like a dork, and this is embarrassing,
yeah.
You know, because if you do something that's slightly embarrassing and yet it's, there's a sweet spot where it's fun. If
yeah.
it's not too embarrassing, if it's a bit silly, and you've got other people to do it with.
Yeah,
so,
it gives an excuse.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
isn't it? Like,
exactly. Yeah. And so a lot of people said that was their favourite moment of the show, actually. And yeah, one of the audience comments was, my favourite moment of the show was being made to look like an idiot, which I think was that moment.
Really good.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think what's really fascinating about this is that everybody got into the spirit of it, and even though, like, if they'd have sat back rationally, they'd have said, well, of course there's no, like, data cloud and,
yeah.
you know, and blah, blah, blah. But
yeah.
they were very happy to use their imagination.
Yeah.
And the more they put in, the more they got out.
Yes. And I did get told, I got told by a friend who did the show that the night he did it, there was someone who was a classical musician, and she was quite reserved at the beginning and obviously seemed to think that the show was a little bit beneath her.
Oh.
But then at some point she suddenly clicked into it and she completely loved holding her phone in the air. And it was like, and when I heard that, it was like, yes, I have a convert. So basically someone, you know, somehow or other the show enticed this person who didn't think she was into doing this kind of thing into completely buying into it and completely engaging with the pleasure of doing it. So, yeah.
That's really good. And
yeah.
So was there, because you've got so many things to, like so many variables to get right along the way,
yes.
Was one of those things like increasing levels of difficulty or anything like that?
Yes, I did add increasing levels of difficulty in a fairly simple sort of a way. For example, the words that were exchanged, the first couple of times they did them, they were very simple words. Then for the final one, I told them that they needed to spy on each other to see if they could pick up the code words that other people were exchanging. And instead of words like traffic and pedestrians and blue and red, I had fandango and giraffe. And yeah,
so
you know,
they had to make a sentence yeah. using the word giraffe or something.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, I chose the most, you know, bizarre words I could think of, and so it kind of ratcheted up the difficulty, you know.
Really good.
Yeah.
Now, what sort of documentation did you have to produce for this?
I had to produce an awful lot of notes. So the most time consuming thing was creating the notes for the audience. They were each given a plain brown envelope with I think five smaller envelopes in it, and each envelope had a note in it. In that, each one was unique. Yeah, five different notes. Let's see, some of the notes were the same, but I actually put the name of the person who it belonged to on each piece of paper.
Wow, wow.
Just in case, which was insane. And, you know, I have photographs of my living room that is basically covered in envelopes. So, and I ended up kind of manually cutting up with a guillotine, cutting up every note. Oh my goodness. So that was by far the most time consuming artifact, but it was all, and I used Courier typeface, so it looked like it was kind of old-fashioned bike kind of thing.
Really good.
Yeah.
And was there like a script document, or did you just have notes that you gave to each actor?
There was a script document that was basically for me, because I was sending the text. And actually, that's something that I wouldn't do again, because I was sending all the text. I was physically stuck in the same place, so I wasn't able to run around and supervise and keep an eye on things the way the director really should be able
to. So you would have liked to have been free to.
I would have loved to be free,
like another silent witness against
Yeah, and also it would have given me more information about how people were reacting to things.
I see.
That would have been really valuable going forward. So, and I think part of the reason I didn't do that was originally the show was going to be so much more text-based that it actually felt like it felt like a more creative role initially, because it was all about the timing of the text and what size pause should be between this text and that text and that sort of thing. And being a control freak, I thought, well, I want to be in charge of that. But, you know, I've learned the error of my ways there.
That's
basically
quite interesting.
And I would definitely delegate that role. Yeah.
Right. And again, so, I mean, with this success, you've got a taste for it, so what's coming next?
Well, I have a number of interactive ideas that I'm developing, and I'm actually trying to do a bunch of different kinds of shows, because I'm at an experimental phase where I kind of want to develop a slate of different kinds of ideas. And also, I can't face doing another show on that scale in the streets of a city. Because it was incredibly, it was really hard work, it was really exhausting, and there were so many possibilities for things going wrong. You know, I mean, we were so lucky that the show actually held together each night. You know, it was like being, you know, it was like driving a car that had, you know, all the nuts and the wheels were held on by wire. You know, there were just so many things that could have gone wrong. I mean, even rain, you know, we weren't rained on for the entire season, and that, you know,
is that rare in Wellington? I don't
well
know.
It was, you know, there was rain the week before, and there was rain that on days that the show wasn't on, and there were days when, you know, it was cloudy, and it was like completely blessed. Yeah, and it was like I have never prayed for no rain as hard in my life as, you know, as during the weeks of the show. There were just so many things that could have gone wrong, and I kind of want to make it easier on myself, actually. So I'm, what's probably going to be the next show is going to be an interactive experience under one roof.
Right.
Which just seems so indulgent to me right now. It seems like, wow, all the actors and all the props and all the audience are going to be in the same building. Oh, this is going to be sweet, man.
But not necessarily in the same room, though.
Not necessarily in the same room. Yeah, but all controllable. So, yeah, this is just, yeah. And kind of from here, what I did was I kind of created the proof of concept. I threw everything I possibly could at it to give people the most amazing time possible, because if it failed, I wanted to know that it was a concept that was the issue, not the execution.
Right.
I needed to be absolutely sure that the concept worked. And I've got that confirmation. People, I kept a comments book, and people were writing things like, I wish this show was twice as long, I never want to leave this world, this was amazing, this was so much fun.
Wow.
So, and this was like, every comment was completely glowing. Thank goodness. You know, and it kind of made me feel, oh, thank goodness it was all worthwhile. You know? But, you know, you can't control how much fun people are going to have or not.
No.
I mean, or you can try. But, yeah, fun was kind of the word, was kind of my key word that I kept coming back to, that I just want it to be fun.
Yeah.
And so thank goodness it was. That was like the most inefficient way possible to do the show, as you can probably imagine. You know, 8 audience members, I can't even remember how many crew there were, but there was more than 8 crew, you know, so not sustainable in the long term. But so now it's a matter of kind of, can I take that quality of audience experience and do it in a more efficient way? And basically from this point I want to work on efficiency and make it more and more and more efficient,
right,
until it's fully viable, basically.
Because when you first presented, I was thinking of like the efficiency thing, and I was thinking, well, possibly it could be pipelined. So you had one group of eight start,
yeah,
and they go off, and then once they're at like checkpoint two, you get the next group in at checkpoint one.
Yeah.
So you could potentially
that is plausible, and I did consider having two shows a night. During that season, but I just think, thank God,
it's too exhausting doing
it. It totally was. And also, the stress level of wondering, like, if the first group is slow for some reason, you know, the second group catches up to them, oh my goodness, what a disaster.
It'll be like the crazy golf. Waiting for someone to finish their hole.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude.
Yeah, because I kind of realised that I was going to get the proof of concept with one show a night, you know, and so I thought, why do that to myself, you know. Because it would have been more than twice the stress. It would have been exponentially more stress, not only worrying whether the group was going to get through and have a good time, but is one group going to have a problem with the other group, or if one group breaks a prop, what's going to happen, you know, when the next group is coming through. But actually, for my new show that's under one roof, I actually am planning to have more than one. I am just insisting with myself that there's got to be more than one group in play at one time, because I've got to get more efficient with this.
Right.
So, yeah.
Because when you say why, so Frequency was supported by like an arts grant, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we had an arts grant.
So
but it didn't cover everything, you know. I also put some of my own money in there to make it viable. Basically.
So is your motivation to make it more efficient to create something which is self-sustaining, that it will pay for itself through the ticket sales? Ultimately.
Ultimately, that's the ultimate goal or hope.
So we were at ArgFest, and, you know, we've heard, you know, some of the early creators of like the Beast and the Bees, and they're talking about how it's a fantastic experience, but incredibly inefficient because they're doing all this work. So is your concern that as you make it more efficient, it becomes less fun?
That is a real concern, because, I am a perfectionist and I want to give people the ultimate experience. And I really hate the fact that efficiency, it does mean compromising that on some level. But I still want to give people a really terrific experience. You know, if it's not terrific, then I won't be satisfied.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just, you know, it can't be gold-plated, you know, and I have to find a way of making it maybe silver-plated instead of gold-plated. But, you know, still give people a great experience, but just, because I'm thinking about things like, for example, if I have more than one group in play at one time, can I actually use that in a positive way and have the knowledge that there's another group in play somehow work for the experience. Because all of these other problems that I told you about that happened during Frequency actually ended up making a better show. You know, I'm hoping that I can leverage that. You know, creativity does thrive on constraints. So I'm still kind of wrestling with those issues, really, and I feel like the only realistic way through to making it really efficient is to just do it incrementally and just to try and make each show that little bit more efficient, you know, until finally I somehow hit the holy grail of, hey, it's now completely viable. But that's my plan. If I try to suddenly make a show economically efficient the next show, it would be. Well, basically, it either wouldn't be economically efficient or it wouldn't be a good show, I think. So, you know, I'm still kind of just gently, kind of learning the skills and the tricks to actually make it viable, really.
Yeah.
And I've also discovered that I am really in love with small audiences.
Right.
I really like the fact that everyone in the audience knows each other's name, knows each other's face, and is interacting with each other, that it's really personal, that you're not just part of a large herd, I've kind of realised that that's quite magical for me, having that small number. So, you know, somehow or other, I want to create it. You know, potentially this kind of thing could scale, and that you have multiple small groups potentially in whatever environment you're creating. So I think, you know, that's the direction that I'm planning to go in. But yeah, keeping it small and keeping it intimate, I'm finding, yeah, just really magical.
It's quite interesting. And the build, do you already have a building in mind, or would this be like any generic building so you can like tour the show?
That's another challenge. I do have a building in mind, but actually I've decided that I need to create an experience that can happen in any space, because I don't want to self-limit it to there. Right. You know, it's in this building and that's it. It can't go anywhere else. I mean, it would make probably a better experience, but it would mean that the show absolutely couldn't scale or couldn't tour, and I would like to make a show that actually can tour, I think.
Vicky Callahan and Sarah Atkinson are two sort of professors who are looking at creating this transmedia database. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about one of their things is like, how do you archive these different things? And you look at a stage play, you can dust off a stage play and send it on the other side of the world, and someone will know how to interpret that and create it. But for these pervasive games, that's not always possible. Like, you couldn't, like, how would you? So I'm wondering, like, if you create something and you might tour with it, but what if there's someone in another country? You want to be able to, like, send them everything.
Yeah,
and say, this is
I do.
How you put it on
I do.
Their country.
Well, that's also my ultimate goal as well, is to create something that is sellable or distributable that other people can put on. And I think that's completely doable. But I think, you know, in the short term, I think it's probably up to me to tour these things myself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at some point, hopefully if I get asked to take these things elsewhere, then, you know, then that can happen. I mean, I've realised that even Frequency, which was specifically designed for Wellington, could totally tour. You wouldn't need to change much. I mean, like, people are semaphoring across the waterfront. They can still semaphore from,
yeah,
you know, two different
locations.
Yeah, you
need a location that's got this. Like,
yeah, you don't actually need water that they can semaphore across. They could potentially stand on different ends of a park or anything. So it's actually quite, it's completely viable to send these things out. But again, you know, I think you need to create, I think my next step is creating a market so that people will want these things. So, because, again, it's, I think an experience like this, it might be harder to read if you just send someone, you know, here are the texts and this is what's going to happen. I think it's still a harder sell than just sending someone a play.
Yeah.
You know, which is, everyone understands how a play works and everyone understands what the demands are of a play, and it's not scary or potentially
life-threatening.
Yeah. Or potentially life-threatening. Yeah. Yeah. I did end up after, I think, the first night, I ended up having this this kind of little disclaimer, and that, you know, as you take responsibility for yourself in the real world, you also need to take responsibility for yourself during Frequency, because Frequency is in the real world. So
One of the things we didn't touch upon was the jerk extraction protocol.
Protocol. Yeah, I did actually have to have a. There was only one night in which we had one audience member who was a jerk. And this guy basically, and I have to say, every other audience member was great, completely bought into the show, but this one guy, for whatever reason, caused problems throughout the show.
He wasn't drunk or anything, like, he didn't turn up smashed.
I don't know. but from the very first moment when the actor came over and said, you know, I'm looking for my girlfriend, you know, she's disappeared, this guy says, oh, I shot her.
Oh, bloody hell.
So, I mean, what is an actor supposed to do with that? And then from what I heard, you know, the actor hauled it back, he then tried to disrupt it again, the actor hauled it back, he is the only audience member who spotted the secret witness, and walked up to her and kept trying to engage her in conversation, you know. And I don't know all the things he did, but I do know that after the first scene of the show, the truck door opened and one of the actors, who hadn't been on yet, said to me, we have a jerk in the audience who needs to be thrown off the show.
Wow.
And she told me what had happened in this scene. And so I
Because he's paid it. So the thing is, what makes me laugh is he's actually like bought a ticket for
this. I know.
And the fun for him, though, is spoiling everyone else's fun.
Yes. And so I'm then texting them all saying, you know, I hear we have a jerk. Do you want me to remove this jerk? And like, I'm just kind of operating on the fly here. At this point, we didn't have any protocol.
We don't even know how big he is.
Turned out he was a really tall fella. And the mole is texting me back, no, it's all fine. And then for some reason, 3 minutes later, I get a text going, the jerk is Drac, which is one of the code names. And it's like, okay, now I know who the jerk is. But the mole wanted to keep it together, and so he did. But, you know, in hindsight, I think I should have just extracted this guy. And everyone was shell-shocked afterwards and talking about, you know, the things this guy did. Like, you know, when everyone was told to get in a group together and to hold their phones up to the ball, he was standing at a distance, you know. Just
spoiling it for
just
everyone
crazy
else, basically.
Stuff. So basically, I ended up coming up with, by the next show, there was a 3-page document that all the crew and the actors got, and it was called Jerk Extraction Protocol in big letters, no mistaking it. And so we had a 3-stage formal process for extracting somebody, because this was basically. I didn't expect we would have this problem again, and we didn't, but I wanted to give people peace of mind that they were never going to have to face this again. So, let's see, level one, there were 3 levels of this protocol. Level one was, if someone is a problem, tell me, I will text them in character, and basically, you know, as resist to command.
Your behaviour is
you know, agent, you know, your training is in jeopardy, and so on, you know. Level two was I I basically said anyone can call a level 1, 2, or 3. And the actors were given code phrases so that they could call a level 1, 2, or 3 while they were performing. Like, you know, the guy who got shot by the ray gun, I was shot 1, 2, or 3 times. You know, the agent who was in the truck, there's a lot of you. I thought there was only going to be 1, 2, or 3 of you. You know, just very basic, easy to remember phrases. If they had given that alert, the mole then would text me and say, So level two were, this is for, you know, obviously worse behaviour. I then ring the person on their phone, because I've got their phone number, of course, and I say, this is Leonie Reynolds, I'm the director of frequency, you need to stop doing X, whatever you're doing.
Right.
Level three was, you had a special mission. Your mission, you know, to discover your mission, go to this point, which happens to be quite a distance away from the rest of the audience, and then they would have been met out of sight by the front of house, who would have then told them that their special mission, they had a physical envelope with a mission, and was your mission is to go and find something else to do in Wellington tonight that is more fun than frequency. And I also, in the text I sent at the beginning of the day, I said, frequency is an interactive experience, so we ask you to come with a constructive and playful attitude.
There you go.
So it was basically, you promised this and you didn't deliver, so get out.
That's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so that's something you'll take forward into the next.
I will. I will, actually. Although I think this guy was an anomaly, probably from an alternate universe.
But it's kind of good to be prepared for the success, and also for like things that might go wrong. And you know, if you're prepared, you don't need to think on your feet so much. You know.
And so and this was for everyone's peace of mind, because I was kind of freaking out when, you know, I realised we had a jerk. It's like, what do I do? How do I get rid of him? Do I get rid of him? Should I get rid of him? At what point does someone not deserve to see the show that they paid for? You know? And so,
Then
in hindsight, it's very clear, you know? Yeah.
What would you do, now you're looking at the next one and you're thinking about how to sort of like move the needle a little bit on the efficiency.
Yes.
What are you thinking in terms of crew and cast?
To be honest, the show that I'm thinking about now probably has a slightly larger cast, but then I only had three in the cast of Frequency. So probably this one will be four or five. What I'm actually planning to do is an arcade game style experience in terms of the kind of arcade game that was at WeirdCon, which was kind of like a live physical video game type experience in multiple rooms. There was a pirate experience in the last WeirdCon, and the WeirdCon before that was a Edgar Allan Poe experience by Heather. I'm sorry, I can't remember her last name, which I played, and I basically got killed in like first room. But it really gave me an appreciation for I thought it was a really wonderfully creative form, and I'd really like to do something in that form. And so I'm taking Jane Eyre as the theme, and I started developing it for a street festival in Wellington, because it happens that one of Charlotte Bronte's friends used to live on that street, Bronte, the author of Jane Eyre. And but I've actually kind of fallen in love with the idea of Jane Eyre now, so it's the fact that her friend lived on the street is no longer really even an issue, so I'm just kind of running with this idea. But I have a number of other ideas, some of which run over a considerable amount of time. I have an idea that I'm working on that runs over a month, where it is classic ARG type of stuff, because you have experiences as a small group within that month. So I'm kind of really working on a slate of formats. I want to develop, maybe five or six different kinds of formats to take forward, because I find variety really engaging, you know. And when you've done one thing, it's really nice to have kind of a break from that by doing something completely different. I'm working on a physical story box as well, and a bunch of other things. And you know, at some point, I think I probably will circle back to doing something like Frequency again, but that's really on the very far on the back burner right now, because I only want to come back to that when I'm way better at being efficient. Basically, because that I think that is the most demanding form, and because it also happened in a concentrated 2-hour window, so it was like being a film shoot that ran for 2 hours, you know. It was like doing one tracking shot for 2 hours. You know, it was like symbolically a tracking shot, because you know, everything is live the whole time, and the crew is running around trying to make this experience seamless, and also trying to, you know, deal with the real world, like that. It's not even fenced off, so it is the most demanding environment. But of course, that also made it more magical, because you're in the real world, and you discover a secret agent lying in a van in the real world, you know, and you're getting a text that's happening in real time, and a phone box that you're standing next to suddenly starts to ring, you know. And so the very things that make it difficult are also the things that really make it magical for the audience, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. It's trying to find the sweet spot between the two.
So at the moment, for me, it's very much research and development, because this is a really new field for me. But I'm really enjoying the idea that you can be a pioneer in this field, whereas in filmmaking, really, everyone's figured out how to make a movie. You know, I mean, not that making a good movie is easy, but we all know how montage works and how sound recording works and how to do a film shoot, and none of that is going to be pioneering, you know, or if it is, it probably shouldn't be, you know. Whereas I feel like for interactivity, and I mean, there are a lot of people who are more experienced at this than me, but it still feels to me like it's a very new field, and there's room to discover things, and it feels like it's still the Wild West in a lot of ways, and that we can kind of ride over fields that no one else has ever been on, and we can discover things that no one else has ever discovered, and we can be the first.
Yeah,
you know, there's still room to be the first.
I think it's fantastic, and that's what attracts me to that area as well. And I think that I would like to inspire. This is why I like these podcasts, and this one's been fantastic because it's to try to inspire other people. I think that when you get your first taste of interactivity, it's absolutely addictive. And it's trying to get people who've never had that before to see what it's like.
Yes.
But as soon as they get it, they get it. But
yeah, it's an absolute it's an absolute drug, and I think it's a drug for the audience and for the creators. I mean, to me, I can't wait to do something else interactive, and because it really is play. And I think for audience members as well, when once you've had a taste, I know all the people who went to Frequency. You know, we'll sign up for the next thing because, you know, they had an amazing time. So,
absolutely. I think so. And I think you get into it a bit more. So we've done these, like, secret cinema things in London. And we've not been in costume before. But this year we are. My wife's quite excited about that. So she's, like, browsing for all these 50s dresses.
Yeah.
And so it just shows you, like, you kind of, sometimes you need a bit of, your enthusiasm for them. Just keeps going on a roll, you know, as you get deeper and deeper, and I think as the players, if the players are more experienced, they can help the other people, the other players who might be less experienced in the group, and it makes, and even if they are all experienced, you imagine like a LARP, you could imagine everyone's like quite familiar with that format, it makes it even better for everyone else, because they all kind of know the secret codes, or you know, they know what to do.
And it really does feel like people have been talking at ArgFest this year about playing with the audience, and that really is what it has felt like to me, is that you really are playing with people, even if it's not in real time, you know, and so it, and there's something really addictive about that. It's like, and you feel, I feel much more connected to the audiences that have been to Frequency than I have for anything that I've, any film I've made, because that is so much in filmmaking, it's like it is completely finished and then you push it into the world, and you know, it really doesn't make a difference to the film itself how people interact, it's just not as key. And so I'm loving this whole thing of let's get in the sandbox and play, which is what creativity is essentially play. And so I find it very freeing, and I find that I keep having ideas for interactive shows far more than I ever did for film. So I don't know why that is, but
you know the format of a film.
Yes.
And you've seen like 200 films.
Like, oh, we could try that. Yeah. And you know, the ideas just keep coming thick and fast, which is pretty nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So Leonie, I'm going to wrap up the podcast. We're probably going to do two from this thing. So how can people get in touch with you?
Okay, my website is mysteriousstranger.co.nz, and that's mysterious with a dash in the middle, not an underscore, stranger.co.nz.
.co.nz, okay.
Yes.
I think this is the first .nz we've had on our podcast.
Yes, I thought about going with .com, but I think New Zealanders like to know that something is local.
Yeah,
so,
why not? Yeah,
yeah. Very good. I can also be found at leonie@leoniereynolds.com.
In case anyone's like, I'm not typing NZ. I've only got a .com button.
Yes.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.